This is the CSIS Global Health Interview Series at www.smartglobalhealth.org.
We're here today with Harley Feldbaum, Director of the Global Health and Foreign Policy Initiative at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, also known as SAIS. His current research focuses on the increasing interaction between the global health, foreign policy, and security communities, on the treatment of the HIV/AIDS pandemic as a security issue, and on health diplomacy. Harley authored in April 2009 a CSIS report on U.S. global health and national security policy, and has recently released a paper on building U.S. diplomatic capacity for global health. Harley, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Nice to be here.
So let's talk about this paper that you just wrote for CSIS, which focuses on U.S. diplomatic capacity for global health. What do you mean by diplomatic capacity, and why do we need it?
U.S. diplomatic capacity for global health represents the organization's staffing and direction necessary to engage not only on the charitable, technical, and scientific aspects of global health, but on the political and diplomatic aspects of global health as well. And let me tell you why that's important. It's important to global disease surveillance and response, and therefore it's important to U.S. national security. Let me give you an example. The recent revision of the International Health Regulations, the IHRs, in 2005 were driven by notions of global health security and protecting multiple countries across the world from transnational disease epidemics. The advances embodied in the International Health Regulations, including allowing the World Health Organization to use electronic surveillance to reach inside countries, essentially breaking countries' ability to cover up epidemics, as China tried to do with SARS. It also enabled a new reporting system, and the WHO used these advances embodied in the International Health Regulations to successfully control SARS and the H1N1 influenza epidemic. But these advances are now in jeopardy. Clearest example of that is Indonesia, who has stopped sharing influenza virus samples with the World Health Organization. And this is because they feel quite differently about concepts of global health security. Indonesia argues, and not without some basis, that the concepts of global health security are really protection for wealthy countries from transnational disease epidemics. In the case of potential epidemic of avian flu, Indonesia does not have access to pandemic vaccine or some antiviral drugs, which for the most part are pre-purchased by wealthy countries. So Indonesia has some leverage here in its supply of influenza samples and has used it and stopped sharing samples with the World Health Organization. Another clear example of how these issues are political and require diplomatic capacity is the recent H1N1 epidemic. In that case, there was a transnational epidemic of flu. It was clear that global manufacturing capacity for vaccine against this virus was limited, and most of it was supplied to wealthy countries. The U.S. actually promised in September of 2009 to donate 10% of its vaccine stock to poor countries. But in the end, they had to renege on that promise because of a lack of supply for U.S. citizens. So these are serious divisions, structural divisions within the global health community on longstanding issues that if we don't address through diplomatic capacity, they have the potential to undermine U.S. global health investments and goodwill towards the U.S. in global health.
Those were great examples, and thank you for giving those. Are there multilateral aspects of global health where diplomacy is relevant as well?
Absolutely. The WHO has emerged as a critical player in global health governance. It plays an essential role, as I mentioned, global disease surveillance and response, but also mediating these issues of global health security, as well as developing new international agreements to support global health, not just the International Health Regulations, but the recently signed Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. Now, the U.S. needs the World Health Organization. It's an essential tool in global disease surveillance and response. And the U.S. could strengthen the functioning of this vital institution, particularly through democratizing the WHO's very secretive elections process and starting to remedy the truly debilitating imbalance between the WHO's regular budget and its extra budgetary contributions. But the U.S. can do this only if there is diplomatic capacity to support global health within the U.S. government. Mm. Let me give you one other example of how diplomacy can benefit global health. In that case is the polio vaccine boycott in northern Nigeria in 2003. And in that case, the essence of the boycott was a political problem. It was distrust of the vaccine in northern Nigerian states, and there were a number of internal Nigerian political and religious dynamics that influence this as well. But the resolution was not epidemiological or biostatistical. It required diplomacy to put pressure on those northern Nigerian states to restart vaccination again. And when Colin Powell got involved and the State Department got involved, they were able to bring in Kofi Annan and the UN and various other players to put that diplomatic pressure on northern Nigeria and ultimately resolve the vaccine boycott. Mm-hmm. That's why diplomacy can be critical to advancing global health.
And how would you describe the current state of U.S. diplomatic capacity for global health? Are we strong or are we anemic in this area?
I would unfortunately have to say that we're anemic in this area. And the clearest example of that is the State Department. The State Department has 61% of the FY 2010 budget request, but the State Department has very limited ability to oversee the number of vertical initiatives going on in global health, to bring groups together, or to have a lot of scientific expertise to contribute to the policymaking process at the state. Symptomatic of this was the dissolution of the Avian Influenza Action Group during the recent H1N1 outbreak. This is not a good sign for State Department's contribution to global health. It's difficult at the State Department because health issues will always be the province of the civil service, away from the power centers of the Foreign Service and the regional bureaus, who really hold power at the State Department. But that doesn't negate the need for State Department engagement on these critical issues. Currently, also, the Global Health Initiative, which is run by USAID, CDC, and PEPFAR, is a little unclear on how the diplomatic aspects of these issues come in. These are all implementing global health agencies, global health and development agencies, and the division of responsibilities across them makes it somewhat impenetrable, at least from the outside, how decisions are going to be made on these types of issues.
And as the Obama administration develops the Global Health Initiative, what steps can it take to further improve the diplomatic aspects of global health?
Well, I've mentioned the clarifying the leadership on the Global Health Initiative, which is an issue not only for global health, but involves a broader debate in the development community about what role development has in U.S. foreign policy. There are a number of bureaucratic changes that could be done in order to put in place institutions to directly address the diplomatic aspects of global health. But I think most important, actually, would be to stop the artificial division between global health aid, currently run through the Global Health Initiative at CDC, USAID, and PEPFAR, with global health security. I think that division between global health aid and global health security is both bad politics and bad policy. On the political side, this division reinforces the notion that there are two different kinds of diseases: important diseases that impact U.S. national security, and other diseases which impact poor countries. I don't think the U.S. necessarily feels this way, but this is the political takeaway that Indonesia, not only Indonesia, but Brazil, Thailand, India, and others also make against the concept of global health security, and this division reinforces it. Perhaps more importantly, on the policy side, dividing global health aid from global health security prevents the really significant amount of funds that are dedicated to global disease surveillance and response from being better utilized to address broader burdens of disease in poor countries. This surveillance, laboratory, and response capacity can be built to address both transnational disease epidemics that are of U.S. national security concern and local burdens of disease like TB, malaria, and HIV that are of great importance to our partner countries. But only if we get rid of this artificial division between global health aid and global health security and address global health issues more holistically and with a whole-of-government approach.
Harley, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. Interested listeners can read Harley Fellbaum's full publication at www.smartglobalhealth.org or at www.csis.org. Thanks
for having me.